Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Tim Jenkins.
I've got people real mad at me in Chicago that how dare you? There's a radio guy up there, Mike North. He was real mad. And I tried to handle it gently. The first thing in his bio was he was born in 1952. And if my grandpappy's on Twitter roasting somebody, I hope they handle him gently. And I tried to.
Founder and CEO of Jenkins Elite.
There's ebbs and flows. There's times where when I watch the Chicago Bears, I think, man, we drew up some diabolical stuff. This was perfect. We knew what look we were getting, and we drew it up. And there's other times where I'm like, oh, wow, we're just running like a preseason play.
Breaking down the positives and negatives.
Unfortunately for the Bears, it seems like we're not going to go just pay top dollar. So if we're not, then guess what? We got to actually be good at interviewing coaches, which turns out maybe we're not good at either.
It's confirmed.
You're sounding real bearish right now.
With Bernstein and Harris on 670 The Score.
Let's jump into the film.
Tim Jenkins has gotten a full-blown Bears baptism this year, and that is not necessarily a good thing. It can lead to wisdom and life experience through trials and tribulations, however. And Tim Jenkins has been our quarterback whisperer here on the Bernstein and Harris Show, which today has former NFLer Anthony Heron sitting in. And Tim Jenkins joins us on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino, CircaLasVegas.com and twitch.tv/Chicago670. The Score, you can find him on Twitter at TJenkinsElite. Hope you had a very Merry Christmas, Tim. How are you?
It was great. It was great. The, four kids, eight and under. They did a great job taking turns, rotating, opening presents. It was a beautiful morning at the Jenkins house.
Outstanding.
Four kids, eight and under. So I got one kid who's seven, and he seems like quite the tornado usually. So for us on Christmas morning, there's a lot of that happening. How organized are you? Are you almost like drawn up plays for, who's in sequence, opening which gifts at which time?
Yeah, we're letting them know, hey, listen, here's how it's going to go in the morning. We're going to go oldest to youngest. And it worked out that our four-year-old boy, he's the one. My eight-year-old boy, he's a really good boy. He's gonna study the playbook. He's gonna do a good job. My daughter, she's a princess. I'm not telling her anything. My four-year-old's the one who's gonna throw a touchdown and flip Matt Nagy off when he does it. he's gonna change the play and he's gonna throw four verts. And it was supposed to be a run play. He's gonna check to four verts, flip him off as he throws a touchdown. And then my youngest, he just had no idea what was going on. So we did a good job. We released the
depth
chart.
That's the one the Bears are gonna sign.
Yeah.
Four-year-old gonna yell over the mouth. Tell Dad I said bleep him.
That's dead last. So yeah, it was good. It was good.
So you are continuing to endure Bears football, and that one Thursday, wow, man. A lot of times you can tell me what you thought they were trying to do. And when I started looking at some of the next gen stats that crossed about just how long it took for a ball to actually travel more than 6 yards through the air, I can't figure it out. I don't know what they thought they were trying to get done.
Yeah, it was tough. Obviously the biggest, and you didn't have to be former quarterback or anything to understand. I mean, we didn't have a cover zero answer, right? And not even zero, right? But we just didn't have a pressure answer. And the truth is Seattle didn't really give us zero that much, right? Because they just gave us a bunch of simulated pressures and dropped guys underneath. With that being said, we just had no answers for it. We had our guard chasing guys that our back was going to. To me, it's just the way, I've always thought the way you solve pressure is you over-communicate it. Right. You make it abundantly clear. Hey, who do we have mic'd in this situation? Where do I want my line going? I talk to my back. Hey, listen, this is where I want you So at least I know who's coming free. What I think worries me is it doesn't seem like Caleb's over-communicating it, and I don't mean that as a dig at Caleb. What I'm worried at is that we're not running it through him. What I'm worried is that we're simplifying this and running it through maybe our centers dictating a lot of this, to where then you're kind of back there, you know, you're a quarterback, you're back there, my center's doing something, hey, the play clock's ticking down, I can't really override him, and then you get in this situation where guess what, my back chased the same guy, and now we're turning one of the closer guys free. And you turn one of these linebackers free at the NFL level that start at the line of scrimmage, I don't care who you are, you're going to end up retreating and throwing the ball up. And unfortunately, that's what happened. And, you know, Caleb, to his credit, is so athletic, he can hold on to the ball and spin out of there. My ass would have just been on the ground. So, you know, at least he can do that. But it was just no plan for pressure. And then from there, it stems to, you know, there's a lot of situations where you watch the concept and you go, I got no idea where you're supposed to go with the football on this play.
From a macro evaluation of Caleb's rookie season with a game to go here, there are some games where I do feel like we consistently see him in rhythm. It feels like he's seeing the field well. It feels like he's, you know, a lot of the sacks that have gotten taken this year, you can certainly credit to him just holding the football, not seemingly having that clock in his head. Has there been a consistent difference in some of those games where his clock seems to be functioning at a really high level and where things have more consistently been on time?
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it, which is you've seen ebbs and flows of it, right? You've seen, like, to me, that London game was about as good as it got, right? And we just wasted it all overseas. You know, we just, like, went over there, traveled. The guy's got a great experience. And to me, that was when I thought he played the most on time. I think the interesting thing is, if you were to say, like, hey, what's the takeaway from Caleb's rookie year? To me, the thing that's interesting, it's almost like comfortability in chaos. I almost feel like if we could turn someone free on him, it's like those are the play. I mean, the last drive of the game, the last drive, right? When he's retreating, he makes the incredible throw to DJ Moore. He makes the throw to Rome. And then it's like, then we run four verts. We run 3-by-1. We got Komet working across. We used to call it a cricket nine, where you're really trying to work to that opposite hash. And Komet's wide open. We miss him, and his eyes are on him, and that's like pure in the pocket. So it's interesting because to me, Caleb's really good at the stuff that I've always felt is the hardest to coach. The where he's struggling, I feel like, is the most coachable aspect. I guess my only worry when it comes to that is, you know, we're 20-something years old. Is that the wrong time to start to get good at that stuff, or are we maybe seeing like a Josh Allen development curve where actually we can dial in our footwork? Because, you know, you look at Josh's footwork was terrible, but his biomechanics weren't great either. Caleb, the difference is I think Caleb from a true, I don't mean like he's not athletic from his feet. I mean, just like true tying his feet to his progression. I think it's bad. But to me, that's coachable. And his biomechanics are tremendous. So to me, it's like it's almost Josh Allen, but you have one less thing to do. And then guess what? We also have all the other stuff, and he's proven that he can do that week in and week out. So to me, I'm optimistic going into the offseason. I think the biggest thing is, who the heck do we get in that building? I think that's probably my biggest fear with the Bears.
Something that came up after this game, and I think it was Olin Krutz that started talking about it, and based on some things that Chris Beatty was saying as well, is Caleb at this stage of his NFL career really learning what it means to watch tape and how what is meaningful and what isn't meaningful, and the idea of not just sitting in front of a screen and saying, oh, I'm doing prep, I'm preparing, and I can't speak with any sort of conviction of how good or bad he is at it. I just know there's a learning curve for a lot of quarterbacks, especially for what it means to watch tape. When you advise younger players, or whether, you know, high school or college, how do you teach someone how to watch tape meaningfully?
Yeah, that's such a great question. Here's what I'll tell you that I think the best thing Caleb Williams could do. You don't do it until you're a coach, which is what they call padding a game. You watch a whole game and you draw up what every single person on every single play does. If Caleb was going to come to us this offseason, Caleb would pad all 17 of his games this year. Because is that like a great is that like the best use of time? No, but to me, it's brute force of learning the game, right? It's that no matter who you are, if you were to sit down and pad 17 games, your football acumen grows so much. And it's just by like brute force. It's not by like, hey, here's some special way. And then we would get to the conversation of like, hey, man, what does your week look like from a prep standpoint? The best thing we do is you just sit in there and you let give the kid the clicker and see what he does. How many times do you watch a play? Hey, what are you looking at? Hey, we moved on to the next play. What did they run? What coverage was it? Oh, I don't know. Well, then why the heck we move on, right? Like, to me, I think you kind of turn it over to him, see how he's doing it, and then you start breaking up the week. A lot of this, too, though, comes, you know, certain quarterbacks, you know, like Peyton, right? Peyton showed up in Denver. Peyton had the way that he broke down the week, right? Peyton, you started on red zone. He wasn't like, hey, I'm not waiting until Thursday or Friday to do red. That's where he started, right? I think a lot of that goes back to 18, probably was going to get you down to the red zone no matter what, right? So to me, it's like, that's probably why he starts there. But a lot of it has to do with what do your coaches want to do too? Because, you know, hey, if we're doing third down, I got to make sure I'm versed in third down before we enter that day. I my thing is, and I know guys speculate, right, of, hey, you know, is Caleb, you know, what's Caleb doing? I haven't seen anything that jumps off the tape where I'm like, man, he's struggling processing. I think you haven't padded the games to just grow his general football acumen, because no matter what, you're never ready for the NFL. I don't care who you are. But I do think, like, I'm not really worried about him from getting to the right spots, especially because I just feel like a great coach helps you so much early in your career. Like, an example of this is like, you know, let's take it to the high school level. A really great example of this is like you sit there and you run, you know, two receivers on each side. You got smash on one side and then you got highway on the other, right? Double verts. And you say, hey, against single high, we want to work highway. Against two high, we want to work smash. That's like so great in theory until you actually get out there and you're like trying to snap the ball and the strong safety's at 10 and a half and the free safety's at 12 and you got no idea, hey, is this sophomore just dumb and he lined up in the wrong spot? Or are we actually rotating coverage? To where like that's when I've really grown on, and I know different guys have different opinions, but I've really grown on this pure progression with coaching points, with strict addendums. Like, for example, hey, get him in a 3x1, run timber, which is the two outside guys on unders, the number three on a corner. We read it under to the corner. Hey, with an addendum against what we called Afro, right? Off coverage, away from rotation, we'll throw DJ Moore. Okay. That to me on the backside one-on-one, that to me is how you help young guys play with confidence, hit your back foot, let the ball go out. And I know people trash the pure progressions. They think we're not teaching guys. I just, you know, Stafford's running pure progressions a ton in LA. And I tell you that I think he's probably one of the more knowledgeable guys. So if we've decided, hey, Matt Stafford in year whatever he's in can still excel in this, I don't think it's a bad thing. So to me, it's like, I'm not as worried about him from his film study as much as it's like, let's get someone in building who can help him play fast. And then obviously this offseason, he needs to go and he needs to really dial in. Hey, what am I watching? How am I watching it? How do I want to attack my week? And then from there, I think it's all about who they get, right? It's all about who gets in there and helps the young guy kind of grow as a true pro.
There's certainly no one perfect path for a number one overall pick or for a first round QB, a guy who's going to play a lot as a rookie. But Caleb, by comparison to some of his contemporaries, Jaden Daniels had just played a bunch more football, had a bunch more time on task at the collegiate level, a lot more competitive snaps in critical moments in game. Bo Nix has played so much football. Yeah, they're older entering the league, but they just played more, where Caleb is 3 years removed from high school football. How big of a factor is that on the development arc, where it's no doubt in my mind Caleb's ceiling was the highest of the three going into this draft cycle, but as far as the comfort as a professional quarterback in their rookie season, I think we're seeing the difference just in age and time on task.
I couldn't agree. I couldn't agree more. And then I also think it's even deeper than that. It's not even just the time. Think of Bo Nix's career. How many different offenses has he learned? Whether it's a coordinator change or a full-blown, hey, I'm leaving and going to a different school. Same with Penix, right? Yeah. Penix, yep. You got the same thing. You get Jay. So to me, it's like, you know, Caleb, if you look at it, he left, and then all he had was Lincoln, right? He left and all he had was Lincoln. And I'm not taking a shot at Lincoln because I think he does a good job at the college level. But we haven't seen Lincoln Riley quarterbacks come into the league and be ready to handle 97 different protections, right? That's not their expertise. Their expertise is, hey, let's play fast. You know, we'll force the defense's hand a little bit, which is okay too, because, hey, we need to play fast in a 2 minute, right? So there are certain things where it comes. But to me, I think you're dead on. I think having someone, just having more reps is going to be great for him. Unfortunately for Caleb, the more reps are coming in a market in which we are not ready for another. It's going to take a while for this quarterback, right? That's the one unfortunate thing for him. What I will tell you, though, is I think you're dead on. It's always funny how many quarterbacks get cut right when we were figuring it out. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, I just started figuring out the dang game and, you know, I'm out the building. And to me, I think Caleb, this next coach, you know, he has time. I do think you're dead on. I also think when you look at the rest of the class, the situations they walked into, Bo Nix with Sean Payton. Listen, right. Everybody knows Sean's a dick, right? Like, but if, when it comes to coaching quarterbacks, man, awesome, awesome, awesome from that standpoint. Then you look at, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, say whatever you want about him from when he's the head guy, but dialing it up an offense that a quarterback feels comfortable in, no one's ever questioned that. So it's like, I just think when you look at the environments they've gone into, and then you look at Penix, and I thought he's come out great, but shoot, he was sitting for how many weeks, exactly. Right? And it's just, it's more learning, more reps. And again, Kirk's another guy. You can say whatever you want about what you think of him as a quarterback. But from franchise guys who have gotten paid that much money and to have humility when that move gets made. And again, you never know what someone's like behind closed doors. But it seems like he's been as about as supportive as you're going to get from hyper-competitive people. So yeah. To me, it's like I just think the environment that Caleb's in has been drastically different. But yeah, you're dead on it. Just more reps are always going to help these young quarterbacks develop.
Hey, Tim, let me ask you this. Theoretically, if you were brought in by the Bears as a candidate for call the job, whatever you want, whether you're the offensive minded head coach or whether you're the offensive coordinator for a defensive minded head coach, what are three questions? And it's just you and Caleb. And at this point, you're a finalist and you get to talk to Caleb. And it's not necessarily formal. There aren't other people around you. It's the two of you. You're either driving somewhere or you're having a beer. What would you really want to know, and how would you ask it?
The first question would be, how are you doing? I want to get to know the guy, right? Like, hey, how are you holding up? How's this been? What I'd love to hear is that, I've been humbled, but I'm ready to get to work. That's what I would want to hear, right? The second thing would be, draw up your favorite high red zone play and how are you reading it? Because what I want to know is, how has he been programmed? Has he been programmed to where every play has unlimited options based on the coverage? Because that's my feeling, is that Caleb's, his whole career, is every receiver has always been eligible. And if that's how he's been programmed, man, I'd feel great, because we're going to come in there. We're going to come in there with some clear criteria on how we're going to read plays. And you're going to see Caleb Williams getting the ball out of his paw with conviction, right? That's the second thing. And then the third thing for me is going to be, talk me through base protection. Mm-hmm. Base protection. I would kind of like to go one more, which is, hey, give me your favorite run bubble run game check. Because I want to know, how versed is he at understanding, hey, we only like open side zone against an overfront. We don't like, hey, they kick it to under, we can't run open side zone, we got to kill, we got to get to Bruce, right? I just want to know where he's at, because then I can stack rank what we're going to work this offseason, right? Because the first thing, the how are you doing question, I need to know it during OTAs. Do I need to rehab this dude mentally?
Yeah, would you know if he's lying, though? If he's, yeah. I'm good. If he's like, I'm good, oh, yeah. I'm good.
You, if you're good after what you just went through, you, hey, we got to get a shrink in here, right? Like, you know, but to
masochistic.
Me, like, yeah, like, I think we can, to me, it's like OTAs, hey, how am I coaching you? Is it a little bit light? Like, am I building you up, or are you ready to roll? Because if you're ready to roll, we're going to hit this thing running. Then it's going to be, hey, then the focus is, here's how we communicate pass plays. Here's how we attack the defense. Here's how we play with conviction. Then you get into protection. Hey, here's how we're going to make sure you're blocked up. You know, you get into that early training camp, because we got live bullets coming now. It's not just OTAs. I got vets running around tapping each other's ass. We're going to hit a little bit. And then you get to run game, which is, do I need to make sure we're calling in run it runs and I can't trust you? Or are you going to help get us into the right run play? Because if I go into year two with a quarterback and I can get him playing with conviction in the pass game and protecting himself, I'll live with run it runs where we gain a yard, right? If that's what I got to live with, I got to live with it. I got to be a better coach, make sure I'm calling in better plays. But man, if you get all three where, listen, Caleb can get us in and out of the right run play, he's going to block his ass up, and we're going to make sure that we're playing with conviction, I'd be pretty darn excited going into the next offseason.
To use kind of a crude or basic parallel, I feel like there's times where my seven-year-old son, because he's got a big vocabulary for a seven-year-old, I almost forget that he's only seven. So I start talking to him like a grown-up sometimes, like, well, why do I go, oh, he's only seven. I think Caleb is such a mature communicator and has this very adult demeanor about him. My impression is that it's almost difficult for those around him to diagnose what can he really handle? What is too much for him in certain moments? Like all these sight adjustments where between him, you've heard veteran receivers talking the entire season about we're not on the same page. He and Roman Dunze, who are probably less on opposite pages than he and the vets, but even he and Rome just don't always connect in game where you can tell Caleb's spot throwing it somewhere where he thinks the receiver's going to be, and they're just not there. How difficult is that to massage within a passing offense with so many seemingly sight adjustments built into it?
Yeah, you're dead on, too. That's such a great point. Because like you're saying, and it's not just the sights, right? It's not just like, okay, hey, we got the backside breakout, but now also, hey, are we blocked? You know, that's a perfect example is when he took the sack. I want to say it was like they're in the middle of the field. They got the free runner. It was when Amazon went crazy, right? Because they highlighted the guys or whatever before they blitzed. Well, the backside guy was DJ Moore. He was on the breakoff, and Seattle dropped underneath the breakoff. But I'm sitting there, and I'm going, we don't even have a hot front side. Like, imagine playing quarterback where you're sitting back there. It's third down in the NFL. Basically, everyone's eligible to blitz because it's a great coach defense. And you're sitting there and you're like, I'm not really sure what side my hot is. Like, come on. You can't. I mean, it's like, to me, that's like, it just, you can't do it. You're dead on, though, of like, I almost think over complicating the heat periods, like, hey, we're going to take a 7-on-7 where we're just all pressure and I got to make sure you know where you're at, would really benefit. My worry, like you said with Caleb, where he's probably such a good communicator, probably can grasp so much football. My worry is that he can grasp a lot of football maybe on the whiteboard.
On the grease board, yeah.
And then you get out there and you go, you know, hey, it's one thing to know you're hot off a two front side. It's a whole nother to see, and you know how it is. How many times are those safeties going to kick it one way and then snap and the blitz is coming from a different side? You've never seen that in high school. You know how it is. In high school, it's like half these kids aren't ever going to play football again, so they don't even know how to disguise. Then you get to college, and everyone's so scared that their job's getting taken that they don't disguise. Then you get to the NFL, and you go, oh, my gosh, actually, the safety knows as much football as I know. And that's a rude awakening for a quarterback is when you start talking to other players in the NFL because you've always been smarter than everybody. And then now you're going, not only am I not as athletic as everyone, but guess what? They know ball, too, right? That's when you're in trouble because it's like, you better really elevate. And I think that's where Caleb's at. I think he probably knows a lot of football on the whiteboard, but I do think where he needs to grow is maybe those just veteran understandings of, okay, hey, they're moving this way, but we can still bring it this side. Hey, how am I going to protect myself with my hots and my sights? And then worst case scenario, do I need to dirt it here? Is this just a throwaway versus a backpedal and create? And that's just, I think, communication from your coach of like, hey, it comes into your headset, right? Hey, twins right gun, scat right, F ship. You know, hey, third and forever, you can create if you want. Or, hey, we're in field goal range. If you don't like it, get it out, right? Like, there's certain things that I think those great play callers put in your head as you're walking to the line versus maybe just cut and dry only the play call.
Tim Jenkins, have yourself a happy and healthy new year. Don't overdo it tonight. Your work is appreciated as always.
Appreciate you guys. Thank you so much.
That is our quarterback's coach, Tim Jenkins. By the way, if you're a local business owner or employee and you want to have your commercial air during Super Bowl 59 here on The Score, this is your chance. We've brought back the Score Big for Your Business contest, where you can enter to win a 30-second Super Bowl commercial on The Score's broadcast of Super Bowl 59 from Westwood One. Just log on to 670thescore.com/contests to enter now and learn more details. Deadline to enter is January 19th. We are the Bernstein and Harris Show. Anthony Herron is in for Marshall. We're going to be sending you out to Trace in Wrigleyville in just a little bit for Lawrence and Layla for what we believe is still going to be the Winter Showdown Outdoor Hockey Classic. We think that they're going to try to get this in as far as we know.
And swim.
That's coming up in just a bit. When we come back, I have like a humble brag, or maybe kind of more of a brag, and an appreciation for somebody I'm usually making fun of instead of appreciating. That's next.
Bernstein and Harris.
Really excited for you and Marshall together.
Middays 10 till 2.
Love Marshall, love his work, man, so I'm excited for that pairing.
All right, so every once in a while, I get one right. Every once in a while, I get one right. I get a lot wrong when it comes to the NFL draft, when it comes to the NBA draft, when it comes to seeing somebody who playing in college or elsewhere and saying, you know what, this guy's going to be really good. And I own up to my Christian Hackenbergs.
Oh, boy.
No, I do. I do. Right. I absolutely own up to him, and it's rare that
you weren't alone.
I know. Well, I was eventually. It was as we all are. We all die alone on our hills of bad picks, the graveyard of horrible picks. But it took Danny Parkins to remind me of this via Twitter. But after the Caleb Williams discussion, everybody knew they were going to take Caleb Williams number one. Mm. But I said with that nine, if he's on the board, I'm taking Brock Bowers.
Oh, okay.
And it's not the biggest deal in the world because he had a can't-miss grade from a lot of people, but that's every time I saw Brock Bowers coming back from injury or just like that, I said, there's no way this guy's not a star. Like, I don't care what team, I don't care what system you're running, I don't care what else you're doing, that dude is an absolute win-because-of star football player at that position. And like I say, every once in a while, I'm allowed to get one right. So I kind of felt good. I haven't watched a ton of them. You see all the highlights. Did you see that he broke Ditka's record?
Oh, he did end up breaking it.
So
I knew he was like on pace.
Brock Bowers. And so part of this is a Ditka appreciation that I think that Ditka has become this cartoon character. That... even, you know, I'll admit that even as a Bears fan and even as somebody who, you know, grew up a Bears fan and then had the privilege of being a Bears reporter and to this day, you know, getting paid to talk about the Bears, I didn't appreciate Ditka's greatness. Mm. He, in 1961, up until this year, had the standing rookie receiving yards record of 1,076. Okay, think about that. Think about how many games they played then. That was 63 years ago. That record has stood since the Oakland Raiders were only in their second season in the AFL. That's how long Ditka's record stood. And as you know, well, the tight end was not a receiver. The tight end was tight to the end of the line. He was a blocker, a tackler, a blocker and a run, an occasional outlet, an eligible receiver, but a guy who was there to maul people and shove people backwards and get out there on the edge and pave the way. They were glorified tackles in like the Mike Martz sense until Ditka did that. And that record, even through Tony Gonzalez, through Antonio Gates, through Kellen Winslow, Ben Coates, I don't care what era, and all of the tight ends, or Kellen Winslow Jr.,
Rob Gronkowski.
Yes! That record stood. That record stood until this year, when the forward pass was something that everybody thought was generally a bad thing. That's amazing. We're getting various reports about Ditka's health or status of compass mentis, but I hope that Ditka was able to reach out to Brock Bowers I really do. And I hope that Brock Bowers understands what that means.
Right.
I don't even think there are Bears fans that know that for in this game, for a game that's entirely different, the season is 17 games long. They and the forward pass is now the dominant mode of movement. We've got tight ends with how many catches? I had 110 catches. I had 97 catches. 104 catches. Shannon Sharp. You know, name anybody you want. Even these glorified wide receivers that play tight end.
Yeah.
That record has stood for 63 years. That's older than I am.
I mean, the amount of games being different, and it makes you respect what Mike Ditka was able to do back then with how football was designed. And, you know, of course, Saquon Barkley has a great opportunity to break the rushing record. And yeah, it's more games than Eric Dickerson, but Eric Dickerson was playing more games than his predecessor as well than O.J. Simpson. So, you know, I mean, these things are going to continue to evolve over time. But that type of weapon, I mean, you know, I'm not going to say the Bears are hoping Gerald Everett would be Brock Bowers, but...
Gerald Everett. Your most disappointing name we didn't come up with.
Yeah, exactly. The hope was that they'd get some receiving production, some route separation, some run after catch in a way that was just going to be different than Cole Kmet. And they certainly haven't gotten that from him. I still probably would have as much confidence as I think there would have been in Brock Bowers as a playmaker in Chicago. That would have felt gluttonous to me, too, just like the Roma Dunze pick. I called it gluttonous at the time. I still think I like Rome's potential. There's a lot of growth that needs to happen there when you compare him with a Brock Bowers or a Malik Nabers or a bunch of the other guys, rookie pass catchers in this draft cycle who just look like a problem right now. I don't look at Roma Dunze and say, all right, that's a problem. Defense looking at film like, how are we going to deal with that guy? He's a touchdown waiting to happen. So some growth potential that's there, but right now it's more potential than actual production from Rome. But Brock Bowers, that's made man right there. It's an amazing season he's had.
So let the record show, on this show, I have said nice things about Mike Ditka. I started out by complimenting Illinois football.
True. And yeah, look at you.
And Anthony Heron hates Horace Grant. It's amazing.
Who did that get? After all these years, it finally came through.
Circa Sports Illinois invites you to join the score at Trace in Wrigleyville today from 2 to 6 p.m. Lawrence Holmes and Layla Rahimi broadcasting live before the winter showdown on New Year's Eve, celebrating the outdoor hockey classic between the Blackhawks and St. Louis. That's Trace in Wrigleyville today from 2 to 6 p.m. Brought to you by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. When we come back, something happened in an NFL game that I'm hopeful is going to trigger a story from you. Fair enough?
I'm guessing it will.
Okay, good. That's next.
Dan Bernstein, Marshall Harris, The Bernstein and Harris Show, middays 10 till 2 on 670 The Score.
All right, so tell me if you've heard anything like this before, Anthony, ever in your career or beyond.
All right.
So Justin Jefferson apparently had a diamond necklace. He was playing NFL football wearing a diamond necklace worth $1 million. And it broke during the game. So he shoved it in his pants. And he played, was it the remainder of the game, or at least the remainder of the half, or whatever it was, with $1 million worth of diamonds shoved in his pants.
Oh.
Have you ever heard of anything like that in your life?
And they won. So, I mean, he's got to keep the tradition alive.
I don't know if that's the most baller thing I've ever heard, or the craziest thing I've ever heard.
Yes.
Yes?
Yes. I've had a teammate who didn't take his engagement ring, wedding ring, I guess wedding ring, who didn't take his wedding ring off ever, and got his ring finger, collided, sandwiched between a couple of helmets, and it bent the ring to the point where he couldn't get the ring off. So his finger started to swell. Ooh. He couldn't get the ring off and had to go and actually get the ring removed, with tools removed before his finger, I guess, exploded or something. I don't know if his finger was going to spontaneously combust or something like that. But he got his finger lodged between. He never took his ring off and got it smashed in between a couple of helmets. And things got kind of dangerous for him for a moment. But fortunately, he was able to get it removed and had to go get a different ring and everything else. I was actually just telling this story yesterday. I bought my wife's engagement ring years ago. It was in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and it was during my rookie year, September 11th, and 9/11 happens, towers come down, NFL cancels the following week of the season. I'm on the practice squad in Green Bay at this point, so okay. I'm on the sidelines for the game. It's the first Monday Night Football game, getting ready to play Washington, and so I'm thinking, you know what, we had already been together for years, we've been together throughout our entire collegiate career. My wife's an athlete at Iowa. I'm an athlete at Iowa. So we get it that whole time. My rookie year, she's back, you know, she's off working at some TV station, radio station somewhere. Mm-hmm. I'm bouncing around a couple of different teams. So I'm doing my playing thing. She's still, you know, living in Iowa, working in the media at that point. And so we're going to meet up for the first time in the regular season for my birthday. And my birthday happens to fall on that first Monday night after September 11th. So the NFL canceled the previous week, and they're going to make a big deal out of it. There's going to be the American flag out at Lambeau Field. One of our teammates, Gizzy, who was in the military before he played football, before he came to the NFL, is going to lead us out with the American flag. We're all going to be out there waving the flag on the field beforehand. So it's, you know, for obvious reasons, dripping with sentiment for the, you know, so much of the pageantry surrounding the game. So there's this opportunity to take advantage of that. I've decided I'm going to propose anyway. Let me go ahead, go out, get this ring, and propose on national TV on Monday Night Football. I try to pull this off, but security is tight at Lambeau, even in the players' parking lot.
You smuggled a ring in?
They're using the mirrors under the car, the bomb-sniffing dogs, everything in the players' parking lot.
Are we back to high noon with this?
I unfortunately did not have to smuggle the ring in with me because I went to get it resized. I tried to figure out the size of my, at the time, girlfriend's finger by taking off one of her Big Ten championship rings and putting it on my pinky just to see how it fits. And I can tell, no, this is not the right size for the ring I bought. This isn't going to work. So I don't want to be on international television on Monday Night Football with Melissa Stark getting ready to have the mic in my face while I'm proposing, and I got a ring that doesn't fit. So I got to send the ring out to get resized, and I'm hoping that the jeweler at the time will be able to get it resized in time. They tell me they're going to make this happen for Monday Night Football. I give it back to them. They take it. I have to get security now set up to be able to allow this ring through the post 9/11 security at Lambeau Field. So communicating, I do not communicate with Mike Sherman, my coach at the time, but I communicate with the field level security at the concourse that the jeweler is going to bring it to the parking lot. One of the parking lot attendants in the players' lot is going to bring it to the top of the gate. The gate person is going to bring it to the top of the concourse. The concourse attendant is going to bring it down the stairs to the Lambeau Field tunnel, where I will meet that person at the tunnel to get the ring and be prepared to finalize
this
proposal.
This is like a Hitchcock movie.
Yes, and everything would have been spectacular if they would have gotten the ring done in time, which they did not. So I'm just sitting there. I've gotten her a front row seat behind the D-line bench. I've told Gilbert Brown about this. I've told Santana Dotson about this. Kabir Bajabiamila, everyone is turning around. They're bringing her hot chocolate. They're waving. She has no idea why she's the star of the show, but everyone on the sideline is prepared for me to propose to her on Monday Night Football, and the ring never showed up.
Oh,
and I damn sure wasn't about to apologize on international television.
That's a good
with no
story,
ring.
Though. You should have done it. I mean, it's the least romantic way to do it, but if you want to take all that and say, well, no, it's the way I did it. Was, first of all, she was dropping hints for a while and saying, like, hey, okay, you know, like, and she's like, you know, if you're in the market for a ring, this is exactly what I want. This is where the baguettes go. This is the size and shape of the diamond, and this is the whatever.
Now, did you already know about all the C's, color and cut and clarity and all that?
Oh, yeah. Oh, are you kidding? Come on. Like, and so she's kind of dropping, and then, like, look, I don't want to get this wrong. Give me the ring. Give me all the sizing information.
Mm-hmm.
Give me you give me every single specification of everything.
Okay.
And then give me what, if there's any aspect of this in which I have any creative control whatsoever. And she's like, well, no
smaller than this, but no bigger than this. Mm. Maybe this shape or this shape, depending on quality. So it's like it was all done already. So there was never a sizing issue.
Okay.
There was never a sizing issue. And then, of course, because, I mean, look, you know, sometimes, you know, jewelers and you have jewelers in the family. And then I get this, you know, this call from my dad and he had like this special package sent to his office. So I come downtown to his high rise. And we sit at this glass table and he's got six different stones there and a jeweler's loop. And all the information, all the certifications on every stone and the settings. So I was like, hey, I thought what we'd do is we'd set each diamond in each one of the settings and then figure out which ring is better and then see which one. So you could actually see it. And then we package it all up. We put it in the secure thing. We give it to the there's like a truck waiting downstairs. And then that goes back to Omaha. And then the ring will come back to us. So we put this. And then the idiot leaves a message. When we finally get the ring, he leaves a message on my voicemail. It's like, it's your father. That item that we had discussed is ready. And I get home, and I don't know that she had listened to the messages.
Okay.
She had listened to the messages already. I'm getting like home.
Old school answer machine.
Old school cassette answer machine. I get home from playing basketball, and I'm gross. I come upstairs. I'm like, hey, how's it going? She goes, where's the ring? I said, what ring? She goes, the ring. I know there's a ring. There's a ring in this apartment. There's a ring here. I can smell it. But you can smell diamonds? So your dad left a ridiculous message that makes me think, just, where is it? I'm like, you're really doing this? She goes, yeah, I'm really doing this. I said, fine. And I go, and I get the ring. And it was hidden in my office behind a book. Right? So I get it. And here. And I said, well, yeah, here's the ring. You want to marry me? And she's like, get on a knee. I'm like, you really want me to get on a knee?
It's not very ceremonial yet.
Oh, she goes, oh, wait, call my dad first and ask permission to marry me.
There you go.
She said, you don't get to do without my dad's permission. Her dad was in London. And it's no cell phone. So I'm calling the hotel. And I'm like, can you please see if there's, you know, knock on the door of such and such. And finally get him on the line. I'm like, you're not going to believe what's going on here. I don't even know what time it is there. Can I marry your daughter? Of course.
Your
thank
daughter
you.
Has bullied
yes.
me
yes!
into a, yes! a momentary proposal.
Yes. Thank you. Love you. Bye. Then I get down on one knee. And I'm still haven't changed out of my clothes from just having played basketball. And that was that. And that was 25 years ago, going on 26.
So it worked. It worked out.
So far, I guess. Yeah, Happy New Year with that. Your story would have been so much better.
It would have been good. I mean, I did end up proposing before she left town because, you know, didn't know when exactly I was going to see her again. I did propose without a ring, and it just didn't happen with the world watching. I figured if I'm going to propose without a ring, I'll just wait and do it. I did the same thing, though, where I forgot to call her folks, and so now we're just sitting in my little studio apartment in Green Bay. Mm-hmm. We're playing board games. I'm like, wait a minute. I guess if I'm going to do this, I should sneak into the bathroom and call her parents at like 2 in the morning, East Coast time. As I do that, I'm whispering in the bathroom. Her mom has the phone to her dad.
What's wrong with him? Why is he whispering
exactly.
in the
like,
bathroom?
Is everybody okay? Like, what's wrong?
But she'd give me all these rules. She was just like, look, when you ask me, she's like,
when you ask
no sporting events. No, if you dare drop it in a glass of champagne, I'll throw it in your face.
Oh,
she's like, don't do anything stupid. Don't do anything cheesy. Just, and I was like, okay. So it's all good. Everything was pre-planned. So that's why she's now a wedding planner.
Well, she planned her proposal.
She plans it for other people now. Buy her own diamonds now. So when we come back, we will send it out to Wrigleyville, where our friends Lawrence Holmes and Layla Rahimi are waiting at Trace for what we still think is a game that is going to be played. So that'll be fun next.